SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. The weekend, we don't have to wait for tomorrow. We've got a big day today, right on this Friday, with two pretty compelling sequences to grab our attention. You've got the Stronach 5 carryover. It starts at Laurel, 321, races 8, 9, then Golden Gate, 2, back to Laurel, 10, Golden Gate, 3. And it's, I think it, especially if you like My Englehart in the first leg, home run maker, that might be able to turn it into a pick four, and frankly, in New York, most of the races are on. There are three turf races, and only the fifth race came off the turf. And for those of you that want to play the Naira Betts pick five, the late pick five with a $30,000 carryover, that's been turned, I think, into a pick four as well, because Singapore Trader for Barry Schwartz, MTO, the only MTO in a New York bred allowance. Amazing, frankly, that nobody else... Nobody else would MTO, given the time of year. But Singapore Trader, overwhelmingly likely. So it gives you a chance to turn that into potentially a pick four. And there's actually a couple of races where you need it, including the ninth, 16 non-winners at two. I know I'm playing, and I wrote over the last two, three hours, these things up. We'll wait for some scratches, see if there's any significant changes that affect the decisions. It gives you something to do waiting for tomorrow's nice Saturday of racing. And that includes Cigar Mile Day. Dave Greinig will join us first out of the box right at 9:15. We look forward to Dave. We haven't had a chance to talk to Dave too long. And we'll get his read on everything, including the two news stories. They're not really hard news. But there were two pieces of interesting New York Racing Association-related missives yesterday. Dave actually didn't write up the broadcast side. It was written by Matt Hegarty, but Naira and Fox Sports expanding their broadcast coverage 500 hours, virtually every card from Belmont and Saratoga will be broadcast on Fox Sports. It's tremendous. I mean, the distribution of this kind of a program, you know, where it's really focused on the racing and, you know, lots of handicapping discussion and so forth. I mean, this is invaluable. And going back to when the McKinsey study and what the Jockey Club did years ago, and one of the most important lessons out of that, or at least conclusions, was that regular distribution of racing content would be invaluable to bring in, you know, new horse players, new stakeholders, new fans. And this is really has really not been anything of its kind. And of course, in addition to, you know, in addition to the, it's a non-exclusive deal. So in terms of MSG and, you know, the other networks that, you know, that Altitude Sports out in Colorado and some of the other, you know, signal dissemination outlets that NYRA has developed. I mean, it's a very nice piece of news and a positive for not just for New York racing, but if the eyes, you know, land on it, it's a total positive, and applaud that initiative from both the, you got Mike Mulvihill, of course, who is very much into the game and at Fox, and really they should be applauded for this kind of a commitment. And the other news that, you know, has been basically expected for ages, the potential and the likelihood of the 5 day a week of racing, which will be such a welcome, frankly. I mean, we've talked about this the last, I don't know, 6-7 years. Saratoga, the last 6 day a week schedule, and it's grueling on everybody, and the, you know, the more or less the logical and the expected preference that NYRA is expressing to go 5 days a week for 8 weeks and still the same 40 cards, but dark on Mondays and Tuesdays. And I think this will be a positive on everybody. It's positive for the horses. In terms of town and gown, you know, Saratoga, you know, people saying, "Oh, well, what if they don't stay? What if people don't stay? You know, they're not going to be there." Of course, they'll stay. You got a million family. If you bring the family to Saratoga, you go to Lake George. If you are here with friends, play a round of golf. I mean, there's a shortage of things to do in this area. Go to Manchester, Vermont, please. This should be applauded and welcomed and embraced with open arms. In fact, Jay Pridman will be on at 9:40, and Jay has said, you know, for years, he said, wait till everybody, you know, wait till they experience it, going to the 5 days. So Wednesday through Sunday racing at Saratoga, and basically things move up, what, 10 days, 8 days, you know, from 6.5 weeks to 8. So they'll start July, I think they're anticipating, what, July 11th, I think, is the date that, let me look at my, I got a very funny new calendar that, something, yeah, July, well, July 11th is a Thursday, July 10th, I guess, would be the Wednesday. So there you go. And we'll see what Dave thinks. And of course, you know, the you know, that extra time, the one part of it that is a little, you know, a little quirky, I think, is really people that rent their houses out. But again, it everybody adjusted when we went from six, you know, from 5 weeks to six, and from six to 6.5. Given everybody's, you know, the revenue involved, frankly, I don't think people will be put out an extra 10 days. And actually, for employees, for college kids and high school kids, etc., it's a positive, because one of the things that's happened over the years is schools have seemingly started earlier and earlier. And so it'll give kids that are working that have to leave, let's say, in mid-August, it gives them an extra week of work. So that's another positive. And the summer won't go by as quickly for, you know, some of those families of the horseman side that come up here, and you know, their kids basically have to go back to school as early as the first week in August, right? Louisiana and I don't think Kentucky's too much further along than that. So we'll see what Dave Greinich thinks. He's going to join us next. We're going to head to the break, and when we come back with Dave and Jay this hour, get some opinions from Scully and DeRosa, Hammer, Nick Tamaro. We'll go to Mike Welch, get his kickoff commentary for the Gulfstream Winter Meet. It starts tomorrow with the claiming crown. Looking forward to talking about closing weekend at Del Mar. Holy cow. You got that. The Hollywood Derby was already a heady bunch. And then the drawing of yesterday of the Matriarch. Holy cow. Matriarch came up spectacular. So a big flurry to close out the Del Mar season. And then we'll head to Los Al. I'm just pulling up whatever else. Tampa, we should glance at some point. The Lightning City and what do you got? The Lightning City and the Turf Sprint. The Turf Dash. And Pay Any Price, who, of course, unable to participate in the Breeders' Cup. He headlines the Turf Dash. But a lot of our focus today, certainly, is Cigar Mile, Card, Remsen, Demoiselle, the Gopher Wand. Looking forward to it. But the Matriarch, if you haven't had a chance yet, if you know, 14 horses. Chad Brown invades with a trio. George Weaver, Daddy is a Legend, and of course the locals like Vasilika. Anna Maya, who was DQ'd out of her first training win, Excellent Sunset, drew the rail. Mopetism, Doug O'Neill. Doug O'Neill's all over the place, including Japan. Take note, don't forget that Pavel is running in the Japan, the old, it used to be the Japan Dirt Cup, now the Champions Cup, they call it. Pavel, and that's on Sunday from Chukyul. And, you know, next week we got to get caught up on Hong Kong because the international races are coming. But so is the International Jockey Challenge at Happy Valley on Wednesday. And Javier Castellano will head out there. So there's just a little bit. And, of course, I'll mention again, I don't know if either Ed or James will look at Fairgrounds, the Richie Shearer and our love always to the Shearer family and Bree and everybody. By the way, you want to say some thank yous down at Fairgrounds? The Catman, Wayne Catalano. We got 7-2 on Winter Sunset. I hope you went to town. I'm surprised that the Tappet Filly didn't go off a little shorter. She went off as the third choice. That was great. Thank you, Catman. Dave Greinich gets the weekend preview going here on SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Daytime Southern California thoroughbred racing action is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. First post is at 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. On Saturday, December 8th, don't miss a doubleheader of stakes racing action with the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity and the Grade 1 Starlet for two-year-old fillies. Bob Baffert will go after his fifth straight win in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity, while past Starlet winners include champions Take Charge Brandy and Abel Tasman. All the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Plus, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick 4 is returned. The wager has been well received and the pool's figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional pick six wager. And don't miss our live money handicapping contest on Saturday, December 8th. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
The biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When they kick at your front door, how are you gonna come? With your hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun? When the law break in, how are you gonna go? Shot down on the pavement or waiting in death row? You can crush us, you can bruise us, you have to answer to, whoa, the guns of Brixton. The money feels good, your life you like it well, but surely your time will come as in heaven as in hell.
We're back at the races, coming up on the bottom of the hour. And I was looking at that chart, and I should note that from Fairgrounds, waiting for Dave Grenick, the other horse that we talked about with Catman, that was Room to Finish. Room to Finish is in the Louisiana bred race that Waino had suggested they were going to enter, where she'll be 2-5, maybe 1-5. She's overwhelming in there. That's on, I think it's on the 6th, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's on Thursday. Meanwhile, this filly, the Tappet filly out of Winter Memories. Wow. She was really strong in here. Went to the front, and as Jay Privman says, improved her position. She just was dominant under Channing Hill, and now you know why Channing hustled down there to make sure to be on board. Tyler Kennedy had originally been named, but Channing Hill is going to stay close to this filly. TDN made her a rising star immediately. This was 7.5 on the grass. What a family. The whole, the Soaring Softly and the whole Phillips female lines. Unbelievable. I'm surprised that, I guess because she was a first-time starter, and there were a couple of horses that had experience, I guess. They made Bronco Sally, the Brad Cox, second-time starter, moving to the grass. They made her the favorite, a congrats filly, for Calumet. And then the second choice, 3-1, was Lemoyne, who was fourth. Bronco Sally really didn't lift a hoof, but Lemoyne was okay. Not bad in here. Second time starter for Brendan Walsh, Curlin. Basically chased Winter Sunset and could not get to her. And so if you didn't see it, pull it up. You'll be impressed. And I hope you were happy with the 880 that you got, because I don't think 880 might be coming, might not come back anytime soon. You know, and that eighth race, the maiden race, that the Louisiana bred scratched out of Room to Finish, that was for Brad Cox, Lemari, the Don Alberto that had come up too. So, and this was 3-5, paid 340. So that was a couple of the conversations that we had, and there was another one coming up. Brad Cox has got Shining Knight. That was the other, the Judmont that we discussed, and he wasn't as convinced that that this one was was suggesting, being out of an AP Indy mare, that he kind of, I think, was suggesting tomorrow in the eighth that one is going to need a little bit of added ground. So, FYI, and then we told you about not to forget about the Del Mar with Felix Leiter, with the Proctor. Proctor seemed very excited, and he's going to be a decent price in there. And we'll talk maybe we'll get to that race with later on with Hammer. Having trouble with Dave, so you know what, Case? Maybe we could try and see if Jay, I don't know if Jay is going to be ready for us or not. I'm surprised because I said to Dave that we wanted to get to him first and foremost, given the importance of the New York card. Later, speaking of New York handicapping, we'll get to Nick Tamaro in hour three today. I didn't mention Nick traveling, and he'll be ready for us late in the show. So we'll look forward to a visit with Nick. And, you know, given that those two races were on the turf today in New York out of three, I think we're free and clear for tomorrow. There's no precipitation expected, and the temperatures have moderated. So I think we can all expect that sequence tomorrow, which includes race five, has got a state bred allowance going six on the outer portion of the turf course. That's looks like it's fine. And second level open company, six furlong turf allowance. In fact, Albert Trani in there with that nice toughest ombre, and Adonis Creed in there as well. It's a pretty nice group. And these are nice full fields too. So I think we should feel pretty good about the Saturday card. And there's also a turf race earlier, a couple of races in the, if you're an early pick five player too. The first is a first level allowance open, going a mile and an eighth on the grass, and then a mile and a 16th, 25 non-2 as well. So after all the frustrations, we finally to finish the season, because there's not going to be any more turf races for now anyway. Maybe, you know, if things stay the same way, and they could sneak in a couple on the overnights as an extra, maybe. We'll see. But the good news is we're going to finish okay here. And tomorrow's card is just terrific. Okay, this is This is a little maddening, and let's do this. I'm gonna check with Jay and see if he can take us early, just a couple of minutes, and so we come back maybe an hour or two to Greenock. All right, yeah, take the bottom break here. All right, and we'll come back, and we should get Jay Pridman.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. First post is at 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. On Saturday, December 8th, don't miss a doubleheader of stakes racing action with the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity and the Grade 1 Starlet for two-year-old fillies. Bob Baffert will go after his fifth straight win in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity, while past Starlet winners include champions Take Charge Brandy and Abel Tasman. All the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Plus, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick 4's return. The wager has been well received and the pool's figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick 6 wager. And don't miss our live money handicapping contest on Saturday, December 8th. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
The Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Come home practically all
the
We're back at the races. We turned up, we found Greenock, but we're gonna give you Jay Pridman first, then we'll swing back to Dave and then James Scully. And of course, it's been a busy period of news. Steve Anderson was away, and Jay was handling everything, and we'll touch on pretty much all the headlines here for closing weekend at Del Mar, then looking ahead to the Grade Ones for two-year-olds at Los Al, and even a little bit ahead further to Santa Anita. And, of course, one of those stories, in fact, Jay wrote the piece, the decision to add Frank Miramati to the booth, and Jay Pridman joins us now from California. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Very good. And, you know, we're at that point at the end of the year for for Del Mar, and Trevor Denman will wrap up his duties there at Oceanside, and we won't hear from him, of course, until next summer. But Jay, talk about your conversation with Michael Rona, who I can understand the frustration and the disappointment involved.
Well, he was just—I think he was just stunned by the development. He had gone in on Saturday afternoon to have a meeting with Tim Ritvo. Michael, assuming it was to be to discuss a new contract, since his current one is about to expire, and with the Santa Anita winter meeting opening on December 26th, and I guess he'd been after Santa Anita management to sit down and do it, and then but they never even discussed length of term or salary or anything like that, because he was informed soon upon arrival, apparently, that his contract was not going to be renewed and that they were going to be going in a different direction. And that different direction, as we learned, was Frank Miramati, who was going to come back to Southern California, which is where he's from. And as everybody, I think, remembers from about 2.5 years ago, Santa Anita had that extremely unusual audition process where there were four announcers brought in, but the two most prominent being Michael Rona and Frank Miramati. And at the time, Michael Rona was given the job. And now that his contract's run out, they've decided to go with Frank Miramati. I think it's a very unfortunate situation. I like both guys. I'm friends with both guys. I think Michael is an excellent race caller. And I would have felt the same way if this was reversed, if Frank had been picked 2.5 years ago, and then he got blown out for apparently no reason other than they wanted just to do something different and have someone who would do different roles. The thing that I just found, one of the things I found disappointing about the situation is that the new role that apparently they want Frank to fill was never even asked of Michael Rona. He wasn't even given the opportunity to see if he could do some of the things that they wanted. They just felt that Frank was better able to do them, and that was the decision that was made. And it's certainly within their right to do that, but I don't, I just think it's a really disappointing way to handle things, especially when you've got an announcer who is as brilliantly talented as Michael Rohn is. So it's just very unfortunate. And I'm very happy for Frank. I mean, I think it's a dream job, yeah. It's something he's wanted to do his whole life. But so it's a real conflicted kind of situation. I wish Frank well, and I really hope Michael gets something deserving of his talents quite soon.
No, well put. And, going back to the original audition circumstance, that was a cumbersome scenario
I said at the time on your show, I thought it was unbecoming of Santa Anita. I mean, that's something that a jip joint should do. Both Frank and Michael had 20-plus years of experience at that point. You knew what you were getting, and just make a choice. But to have those two guys be put through that process, I thought was unbecoming. And then here we are 3 years later, and it's all been undone. I mean, they should have just picked Frank at the time, or picked Michael at the time, one of the two, and then you just go on with it. But to have that, audition at Santa Anita. I'm not talking about Ferndale. It was just really, it's just been very, it's a real cockamamie situation.
Well, I felt like you did, that it just, got to be happy for Frank, but it, saddened that it comes at the expense of Michael. I mean, it's just and I don't know if you, I'm sure you saw Jay Hovde's piece, and he touched on this, and it, including comments from Trevor Denman, and for those of you that haven't seen it. And as Denman refers, I mean, it's such a strange, it's such a strange job, really, the race caller. I mean, and there's just this universe of it, and it's always under a microscope. I mean, everybody has very strong opinions on it. It's different.
The last thing you just said is the thing that I find really interesting. The back when we had comments in the comment section of Daily Racing Form, whenever there was an announcer position filled or a change was made, the numbers of comments that came in on those topics was crazy. And it happened the other day when I wrote the stuff initially about Michael being let go, and then upon Frank being hired, the most stories were posted on Twitter, and there was the reaction on that, just in terms of the level of interest and the number of people who comment on it, whichever way they comment, but just the numbers of people that have an emotional investment in track announcers is really interesting, and people really feel passionately about that to a level that you wouldn't expect when you look at other things in racing that people feel passionate about.
Exactly right, and I think it's because, and Tim Ritvo, who's come under criticism for this, Tim did have, I thought, a very salient point that he made to in his quote to Hovde, that it's something that draws people, you know, to a signal, and I think for horse players, I think that's one of the reasons this is so acute, Jay, is because horse players have a certain, there's a certain way they seem to prefer races be called, and I don't know if that played into this, the editorialization, because Rona puts a lot of description into his calls. There's a lot of editorialization and ancillary.
You'd want to learn something.
Well, it's just ancillary information, and I don't know. I mean, this is all going back to the audition, quote unquote. I mean, I was chided because I had a certain preference myself on it, and that seemed to offend. I'm just amazed at how offended people get about this. It's really a little odd. Anyway, we wish both the best, and Frank, of course, his mother's out there, and there's a lot of nice parts of this when it comes to Frank. Jay, let's turn to the action on the racetrack, and what a big finish Del Mar is going to have Saturday and Sunday with the turf standards, the Matriarch, and the Hollywood Derby as centerpieces.
Yeah, 14 horse fields in both of them, a nice mixture of local horses and some top runners that have shipped in, top riders that are coming in for those races. The Derby is on Saturday, the Matriarch Sunday. So, yeah, it's a terrific race. River Boyne is probably the best of the locals in the Hollywood Derby. You've got Raging Bull shipping in for Chad Brown, along with Instilled Regard. He's only run once for Chad since he was transferred to Chad's barn, and it was a really poor effort in the Pennsylvania Derby, but he's going to try the grass for the first time, and I spoke with Chad yesterday, and he was very bullish on the way Instilled Regard had breezed a couple of times at Belmont Park last month, and so he said it's just a good opportunity. It's the last grade one grass race for three-year-olds this year where they can run against, for three-year-old males, where they can run against their own age group. So that's why you get a huge field like this. There's one filly in the race, but she drew pretty poorly, California Gold Rush. And I know that the intention for her was to run in here and the American Oaks, which is the filly race at Santa Anita, the early part of their meet at the end of December. So we'll see if they decide to go now that they've drawn where they've drawn in that race. But overall, it's a really neat race. I mean, Tom Morley shipped in Carrick for this race. I mentioned the two horses that Chad Brown shipped in. You've got Have At It. He's a really cool-looking horse. I don't know if you've ever seen him. He's got just a huge white face. Kind of looks, at least his head at least, looks a lot like Talismanic. He doesn't have all those splotches of white all over his legs like Talismanic did, but pretty eye-catching horse. He shipped in for Christophe Clement. So that's the Derby on Saturday. It's a good race.
Before we talk about the matriarch, which similarly drew from far and wide, a couple of other spots, and Jay, the maiden group that goes in the eighth, the six furlongs, these are colts and well, I see at least one Ridgeling, two Ridgelings, actually. Yeah. Make that three. Do we hear three Ridgelings? Baffert bringing out two more, one for Donegal and the Clear Sky bred out of Just Whistle Dixie. What do we know about these maidens in the eighth?
Not a whole lot. When you sent me a text yesterday, you asked me about the stakes and the race in Aqueduct, so I really didn't do a whole lot of research on this. That was something I was going to be doing out in the barns this morning, so I can't really help you a whole lot here, Steve.
No problem. It's mostly first-time starters, and there is that Stratford end for Callahan for the Will Take Charge, and boy, does Kaleem Shah like his soccer. Looks like a race that we should keep an eye on. And, Jay, turn our attention then to the girls on Sunday. And, again, a big, bulky group and a big opportunity for the Grade 1 finale at Del Mar.
Right. So the Matriarch also with 14, and similarly to the Hollywood Derby, a number of horses shipping in from out of state, the best of the locals being Basilica, who's just had that great run of success for Jerry Hollendorfer since he claimed her for $40,000 earlier in the year. Chad Brown shipped in three for this race, Quidora, and then Uni and Rimska, who got two really poor post positions for a mile grass race. Uni and Rimska have the 13 and 14 in the 14-horse field. Nacho Correas shipped in Dona Bruja for this race, and then you've got Mission Impassable, who was sent over and is with Rudolph Brissett and is going to race once and perhaps twice for him. And then you've got Daddy is a Legend for George Weaver, who's come in for this race, along with Valadorna for Mark Cassie. So real good representation from out of state. And again, a great opportunity, a Grade 1 for older fillies and mares. Nice timing with it coming 4 weeks after the Breeders' Cup. And with the Breeders' Cup filly and mare turf being at a mile and three-eighths and also coming up as tough as it did. I mean, this is, you get horses here who aren't really suited to go that far. And this is the spot that they, if you're a miler, unless you're going to run against the boys, this is the spot you wait for. And it really becomes a terrific late year race.
Now, I look forward to this Hollywood Turf Festival as it was monikered, and certainly a great finish. And honestly, Jay, it's been a really good meet at Del Mar for those that have been paying attention. It really has been a wonderful month.
No, I enjoy this meet. It's kind of Del Mar light, four day a week racing. You don't have the crowds of the summer, but it's still high quality racing. Obviously, these grass races are a sensational way to end the meet, but just that whole old turf festival, as you mentioned, that they used to have at Hollywood Park, they've carried it over to here with races like the Hollywood Turf Cup and the Seabiscuit, which is the old Citation. And those are just really neat races, and it gives a good continuity and to what was a terrific stakes program that Hollywood Park used to have in the fall, and Del Mar's carried forward with it, and it's certainly been a benefit to this meet. The thing that's not been a benefit has been the rain we had yesterday, and it's still raining. It's still raining a little bit this morning, but hopefully it'll clear out, and we'll have decent conditions for the weekend. And this turf is pretty firm, so it can take a little bit of water. And it's not a deep turf course either, so it's not like it would become a bog like it might in like a Churchill Downs, for instance, where it was just waterlogged. And you get a deep course. This is just a different kind of course, and so it wouldn't turn into that. But you'd still rather it be a nice day, if nothing else.
No, looking forward to it. And both of these, and we'll talk more about the Del Mar action with Hammer later. Kind of thumbing through. In fact, going the last, since we talked last week, and I guess the only big maiden performance was the most notable actually was a filly, and that was that Kahira that Baffert sent out on Sunday that got an 87 buyer, Cairo Prince filly, and just yet another of the remarkable run of two-year-olds that Baffert has produced. I mean, we've been focused on the boys, but he's got no shortage of fillies, including the ones that are going to run in the Starlet next week.
Right, yeah, Chasing Yesterday and Mother, both breezed earlier in the week. They'll have those two in the Starlet. He'll have two in the Futurity a week from tomorrow as well, with Improbable being the best of those two, and then also Mucho Gusto, who just won the Bob Hope earlier in the meet at Del Mar. He'll come back. Those will be his two representatives in that race. And some of his other ones that ran well and then were given a little bit more time are starting to come back and breeze. So they'll be coming in way. Like Roadster, for instance, had his first breeze back the other day as an example. So those horses are gearing up for the winter meet at Santa Anita. So they'll be coming in waves. But there's as we remember going back to the summer at Del Mar, there were really a lot of good two-year-olds out here, with Hollendorfer having a number of good ones as well, like Instagram. He's back in training out here, and so it really shapes up as being a pretty interesting winter out here for the two turning three-year-old males.
Well, and of course, with each of the point races on the road to the Derby, Jay, you do the outstanding expanded comments, and I saw that yesterday you had the time and went through the juvenile with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah, that should have been up there earlier. Not sure what the hiccup was, but that was the race game winner one to finish out his campaign. And with every point-scoring race in the U.S., I go through the whole field and do comments on every horse in every race. So the Kentucky Jockey Club last weekend, for instance, is the most recent one that was addressed. And obviously tomorrow with the Remsen, I'll have a full recap of that on Sunday. And hopefully it's a good resource for people going forward, because I try and take a look at horses that try and have not just the trip note on them, but sort of expound in cases where I think it's worth pointing out which ones might want to go farther, which ones might be better off turning back, which ones have action as though they're going to be much more suited by being on the grass, and try and point out some of those things too. So hopefully gives you a better feel for who's going to progress and who maybe not so much as we look down the road.
Well, and on that topic, if you want to, before we talk about the Remsen, and it's a fairly narrow, seems like a fairly narrow field, any expanded thoughts on the Kentucky Jockey Club? Because it does feel like this is going to be a productive race going forward.
Yeah, I'm not as bullish as you are on the race, Steve. I thought it was just an okay field. The buyer figure didn't come back all that great. The winner got a great trip. One thing I've written about both in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and then in the Kentucky Jockey Club, I think the rides that Brian Hernandez Jr. has given Signalman in his last two races have been really, really good. I mean, obviously, everybody always focuses on a winning ride after a race. Oh, what a great ride by so-and-so. And he gave the horse a great ride in the Kentucky Jockey Club. But his ride on that horse in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, that's one I went into detail on in the juvenile recap, and I encourage people not only to hopefully read that recap, but go back and watch the race. Signalman had a poor outside draw with a full field, and he was on the rail by the time they got to the first turn. He saved a ton of ground and got through most of the way and finished third in the race, and from where he was drawn to get that kind of a trip was some kind of ride. But you know, he finished third, so it was just not one of those things that I think people would notice at the time, because it was a big weekend with all those big races, and we saw some brilliant rides from Dottori and Rosario. But I would stack that ride up as one of the best of the weekend. It was brilliant. And then he came back a few weeks later and won the Kentucky Jockey Club. But I just think on the whole, at this point, I think the field in the Kentucky Jockey Club is maybe a cut below what we've seen for, you know, going even to the Breeders' Cup. I mean, Nick's Go finished second in the Breeders' Cup, and I guess that race and maybe the previous race in the Breeders' Futurity, a couple of big efforts, maybe just coming back on 3 weeks, it just took the starch out of him because he really bounced. Signalman moved forward, but just or at least continued to run well. But the Fig didn't come back all that strong, and so I'm going to I'm going to take more of a wait-and-see attitude on the merits of that race before I embrace some of the ones that are coming out of that field. Because there were several in the Kentucky Jockey Club that I just thought just didn't really want to run that far or just ran poorly. So I'm, based on what you just said leading up to the question about it, I'm not quite at this point as bullish on that race as you are.
Fair enough, and because I had a real affection going in for Plus Qui Parfait, who should is one of those horses who should benefit from added distance and maturity. You know, I always bring up Jay's Road to the Derby analysis and postscripts because he's got the greatest eye for what a horse's aptitude long term is going to be. And if you read through these, even horses that were up the track, there'll be hints that'll pay off for you down the road. So be sure to, and they're accessible, and it's a great way to keep track of really of the entire Derby trail as we get closer and closer and after the first of the year. And, Jay, with that, some thoughts about the Remsen tomorrow, the mile and the eighth, which has been a race that, you know, is always anticipated but then doesn't seem to have a lot of long-term impact.
Yeah, it's really been kind of the whipping boy of two-year-old races over the years, two-year-old stakes races. But, you know, last year produced Catholic Boy, who ended up being a very good three-year-old. And, you know, the horse I'm really most interested in tomorrow is the obvious one, is Maximus Mischief. His two races to date have both been very fast. You know, Dick Girardi, who I'm very good friends with, it alerted me after his first race. He said, this is the best horse I've seen coming out of this area since Smarty Jones. And then he came back and won his second race with another fast fig. It'll be interesting to see how he does going now, a full quarter mile farther than he's run before, going from 7/8 out to a mile and an eighth. But, you know, he acts certainly like a high-class colt, and I don't think there's a whole lot of depth to that race. So if he is, in fact, a high-class colt, he's supposed to win that race tomorrow.
I tend to agree. And what's going to be obviously the thing to keep an eye on is how, you know, kind of how the pace and how the competition lines up with Network Effect and him shoulder to shoulder. Jay, is kind of going to be intriguing to see, you know, how Pennington and Castellano, how they eyeball each other.
For sure. I mean, that's one of the many interesting aspects of the race. And, you know, it's always, I just like watching this race because of it's a rare mile and an eighth race for two-year-olds, and I think it really can help you realize who is going to be able to handle that distance and farther over the next few months, and which ones are just not going to be able to be up to the task.
Well, and then, of course, the Cigar Mile to follow, and plus there's the Gopher Wand and the Demoiselle. A terrific day, and we'll talk to Dave Grenig next. Jay, I think he had left the DRF before you arrived, but I did want to mention Chuck Scaravilli, who had been long time at DRF and clocking and chart writing and at the age of 90 in Cleveland. And I always kind of use you as the point of reference to acknowledge some of the long gone writers and so forth.
No, I mean, DRF. He and his family are just legends. Yeah. in you know, the Ohio area, and you know, Chuck Jr. I've known forever as well. I didn't know Chuck Sr. that well, because like you mentioned, I mean, I think he retired, it's got to be in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
When he stopped. So, I mean, I knew him, but I didn't know him as well as I know, you know, Chuck Jr. And just obviously feel horrible for the family, but he was extremely well respected as a clocker, as a chart caller, as a journalist, and you know, I'm glad you gave him a little salute here on the show today.
Well, and he trained too. He trained for a number of years. And you mentioned the sons that are also charting. Son Tim is the chart writer at Mahoning Valley.
Right.
Charlie Jr. Was at Equibase. And is survived by his wife of 70 years. Unbelievable.
Isn't that great?
And it's amazing. I mean,
70-year marriage.
It's a testimony to being involved in racing. It keeps you young. How many? It's just amazing.
If I live to 128, I'll equal that.
You got a late start, and we won't talk to you next week because you're the delayed honeymoon. So have a wonderful, wonderful time.
Thank you very much.
Jay Pribman, everybody, DRF Pribman, and the DRF Derby coverage. I'm going to send you the link so you can go to those analysis that Jay does. They're great. And I'm telling you, nobody spots a closing sprinter like Jay Pribman. Jay calls him out and tells you when they go back to 7/8, that's when you're going to be betting them. Let's take a break. Dave Grenig is going to join us, and we flip-flopped. It turned out a phone situation, so we're going to connect with Dave after this. We'll talk about the terrific card at Aqueduct and everything else New York related with Dave Grenig.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year, and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.